We'll be in the first chapter of the book of James this morning. I'll begin by reading. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greetings. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that gives to all men liberally, and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, not wavering, for he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withers the grass, and the flower thereof falls, and the grace of the fashion of it perishes. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he is tried he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them which love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man works not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness of superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any man is a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is likened to a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholds himself, and goes his way, and straightway forgets what manner of man he was. But whosoever looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds. If any man among you seem to be religious and bridle not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now let's go back and see what it really says, because there's a lot of truths, a lot of nuggets hidden in here, a lot of wisdom. James admits to something in the first statement. James, a servant of God and the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's say what it really says. James said, I am a slave. I'm a slave to the Lord. Not because God bound him with a chain, but by the chains of love, he became a love slave to God. Okay? Because of his love for the Lord, that's why he's a slave. And that's the way we have to see it. See, if I'm just there because he treated me good, that's wrong. I'm there because he loved me, and I know it, and I love him back. So I have no choice but to serve God in everything that I can because of the love. The bonds of love that held Paul, like he said, that the bonds of God's love constrains him. Okay, it's the same thing that bound him. He couldn't do anything else but love, because that's what was in him. And when God comes alive in you, that's all you can do. You can only be what you are. Be who you be, right? He said, and to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greetings. Now, where it says scattered abroad, literally it says converted in the Gentile countries. He says, I'm writing this to the 12 tribes that are converted into Gentile countries. Kind of like the parable of the sower. He went out and sowed the seed, didn't he? And God scattered these conversions into the Gentile countries, knowing the parable, knowing the pattern of the natural. If you sow seed, what happens? Something will grow and you'll reap a harvest from it. So God scattered this gospel throughout the world, through the Gentile countries, knowing that in a season of that seed, it will bring forth. Correct? Now, I know people want to say, well, it didn't bring harvest. Oh, yeah, it is. It's still bringing harvest. Because in the little acorn you see laid on the ground, there's not a tree, but there's a forest. The forest, the whole world in that one little acorn. I just found something out yesterday watching TV on a hunting program. Everybody was talking about there were no acorns, and they couldn't find the deer because there was no acorns on the trees because of the frost early in the spring had killed the acorns. But they found one type of tree that had acorns on it because there's different type of white oak, black oak, red oak, whatever. Red oak sets its seed, the acorns, 2 years prior to that season. So the frost this year has no bearing on the crop this year. It was already set 2 years ago. So they continue and go on through. God's got it all figured out. See? There's always a crop of food for everything. See, God's got it all under control. Man's just finding this stuff out, but God's already got it figured out from before the foundations of the world. He's already got it taken care of. And we don't have to worry about anything, do we? So he's did that, you know, just like the parable of the sower in Matthew 13. Okay. Verse 2, he says, "My brethren, not count, but consider it, not all joy, but the occasion for the fullness of joy. Count everything that happens to you for the occasion to take you to the fullness of joy. Every bad experience that I have in my life has raised me another level. And if you look at it the correct way, that it's not happening to you, but it's happening for you, it will continue to elevate you." Correct? "But consider it the occasion for the fullness of joy when you fall into various trials." What did Peter say about trials? "Think it not strange when these fiery trials come upon you?" Okay, he said, consider it an occasion for the fullness of joy when these various trials come upon you. Verse 3 goes on to say, knowing that the trying or the testing of your faith, which he said in Peter is more precious than gold, right? The trying your faith is more precious than gold. Works or what? Or produces what? Patience. It fully accomplishes that, see? Fully accomplishes, not necessarily patience, but another good word is perseverance or endurance. It produces endurance in you. Once you go through something, how much easier is it to go through it again? And it creates a toughness or a rigidity in your spirit, in your understanding, to where you can face the next trial. It builds confidence in you, absolutely. What's it say in Matthew 24:13? "He that endures to the end shall be delivered," see? So this is what it's all tying together. Verse 4, "But let patience have," cross out the word her because it's not there, "perfect or complete work." Let the patience have its complete work in you. Okay? Which one?
Patience.
Yes. Let patience, same one. Let patience have perfect or complete work in order that you, cross out the word may, because that's an added word. That's a doubt word. In order that you be what?
Sure.
Complete in all respects or whole. See? So let them have its perfect work, not that you may be complete, that you be complete. See the difference? "And entire," or complete in all respects, "wanting or lacking nothing." Okay? You want to be complete in everything, you got to let patience have its work. Correct? Does that mean you kick and flail every time something goes wrong? See? You have to be anxious for nothing. Let it go. It'll come out. You don't like it, but you know it's going to work good. Right? "All things work to the good for those who are called according to his purpose," right? It all works together for good. Or we should say it all works together for God. Okay. Verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, and what is wisdom? Wisdom is the ability to use the information that you've gathered. Let me read Proverbs 8. Wisdom does not, chapter 8 of Proverbs, verse 1. Does not wisdom cry? Now this word wisdom, we just say wisdom is wisdom is wisdom is wisdom. No, this word here in the Hebrew literally means God's wisdom. Okay? It's 2451 in the Hebrew dictionary. Anyway, does not God's wisdom cry, and understanding put forth its voice? It stands in the top of the high places by the way in the places of the pass, and cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in of the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom. And you fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Now this word, wisdom, is a different word. It's a word of man's wisdom, of trickery. He said, you sons of man, he said, go ahead and understand that stuff if that's what you want. You want to understand God's way, or you want to... Wisdom's crying out to you in the higher places, in the higher realms, but in the natural, where are they hollering at? Sure it is. The wisdom of God's crying out in the higher places, in the elevations of her mind. But he said, I'm speaking to you, O man. He said, oh, you simple, understand the wisdom. This is the wisdom of man down here. If that's what you want. And see, many people are satisfied with the wisdom of man. It will never bring you to perfection. Well, so just showing you there's relevance here. It's about the wisdom. Wisdom is something a whole lot better than just knowledge. And a lot of people have knowledge, but they don't have the ability to use that knowledge they've amassed. Just like there's a lot of people that have a lot of understanding about Scripture, but don't have the ability to communicate it to someone else. There's a lot of people like that. And see, that's okay, because some people are not meant to be teachers. The church system says anybody that knows anything, you're supposed to be a teacher. That's not true. The teachers are supposed to be able to teach, and they should have the ability to communicate. Our school systems are full of people that are very intelligent, but have no communicative skills. They don't know how to teach their children how to think. They can teach them how to memorize and regurgitate some thought someone had 100 years ago or 200 years ago. But they don't teach them how to think themselves. That's all they got. Just whatever they had. That's it. Right.
One comes from the tree of
life. One from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Right. It's both inside. Separate it. Absolutely. You got to hear his voice. Okay, on with verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, that's the wisdom of God, okay, let him ask from God. See? Now, does that mean you don't talk to anybody else? No. See, God gives us apostle, prophet, evangelists, and pastors who teach for the perfecting of the saints and bringing them to the full stature of Christ, correct? Ephesians 4. So, God give us some people that he chooses to communicate with because it's his choice. If you don't like it, go take it up with him. You know, that's his way of doing it. He chose to use apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastors, teachers. Okay? So, you have to talk to the spirit of the man, not to the flesh man, right? If you want to come talk to me about God, I'll talk to you about God all day long. No problem. Okay? But you have to hear God in yourself. Right? You have to hear the Spirit speaking from me and hear it witnessing in you. If it don't, then you're not hearing it, see? But when you can hear it witness like that, you're okay. You're hearing God. But last, ask from God that gives to all. And there's where the period belongs. I mean, just cross out that next word, men, because he gives to all liberally or bountifully, okay? Or freely. Gives it to everybody. And he upbraids not. Now that word upbraid, it literally doesn't mean anything to me, but everybody takes it in a negative context. Okay, what it really says, he gives it liberally and without reproach or fault finding. God's not looking at your faults, because God knows, and so does everybody else, that we all got them. Right? God's not looking at our negative side. He knows everybody's got a negative side and all kinds of faults. He's looking at the truth. And am I seeking after the truth? There's the whole point. He knows we're all a mess. That's why there had to be a deliverance process, right? That's why he went to the cross. He knew we was a mess. He created us. He knows what's going on. That's why he took care of it before we ever got started. He said, I know they're going to make a mess, so I'm going to buy an insurance policy on them up front. Okay? And it shall be given him. See, if you ask God, if you really want it, and there's a lot of people say they want it, but they're saying, now don't give me too much. Okay? Don't give me too much. I've heard it. And it's just like I had a friend of mine just told me here last week. He said his brother's in some kind of a religious cult. And he knows it's crazy. I won't even get into the names of it or anything. But anyway, he said, his friend of mine's got some medical problems, back problems. And he said, well, let me lay hands on you. I'll have the elders come around. We'll just lay hands on and heal you. He said, hey, well, you can take some away, but don't take everything or you get my check. He was being funny. He said, if you, I don't want to be healed, man. You'll get my check, you know. And he was just kind of joking. I know he was joking. He's a jokester. But his brother took it serious, you know. Well, that ain't funny, you know. He said, no, I don't want to lose my check, man. And there's a lot of people like that. See, they feel that they're comfortable sitting in their little nest of a church and never changing anything in their life, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, never changing, just sitting there and amassing stars on the little page where somebody's keeping track of them being there and never changing their life or the way they think. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing. They just don't get me out of my comfort zone. But God is very good at getting you out of your comfort zone. Believe me. And I think anyone in this room right now can attest to that. I can get some amens in that, can't I?
Amen.
That's right. They can blame him, see?
Absolutely. It's much better than heaven.
Yep. Absolutely.
I can testify to that.
Okay, verse 6. But let him ask in faith. See, not ask because you're playing a game or just because you desire something, but let him ask in faith. The next word, nothing, should be not wavering or not hesitating or not doubting. Okay? And let's go a little deeper in this word because it always has another meaning too. Not trying to decide if God is right or wrong. Yeah, that may is in there, see. Well,
I think it should be more knowing. You just know.
Right, and you're right about that. It's the way you perceive the word faith. And if you perceive the word faith in the way God has it, because there's two types of faith, okay? There's God's faith and there's your faith. And the book says, the just shall live by his faith. Right? So we got to realize, my faith means nothing. My righteousness is as filthy rags in Isaiah. You know, what I believe has nothing to do with it if it doesn't line up with what he said. So all I want is his faith. And he said he gives every man, and the book says he gives every man a measure of faith. Okay, so I have God's faith in there. Now do I want to cultivate this seed of faith or do I want to believe what man tells me? See, I want to cultivate that seed of faith because if you cultivate that seed, it will germinate, it will sprout, it will grow, and it will produce a harvest in your life. That's the way God made it. It can't work any other way. But I got to cultivate the seed of faith. When I cultivate it, I'm saying I have to begin to say, I don't care what people think. I got to know the truth. And there's the beginning of your faith being cultivated. When I say, I have to know. I'm not going to be satisfied with just a answer. I want the answer. And there is a the answer. There's all kinds of answers. Radio Shack had a commercial out for years, and I think they still use it some. You got questions, we've got answers. Most people don't pay attention. It doesn't say we have the answer. It says, we just got an answer. It may be wrong, but we got one. We can give you an answer, you know. And I had a friend who works at Radio Shack, and he said that to me. He said, you better read that commercial again, because it didn't say you have the answer. It says, we got a answer. We've got answers. We've got all kinds of answers. Right or wrong, we've got them. Okay. And that's the way people are in their lives. They're willing to accept what someone said because they're not willing to ferret it out themselves, to dig in and find out for the truth. And that's the cultivation of your faith. And if we learn that faith is just like Abraham had. Abraham, it was considered righteous to him because he believed what God said. Not what someone told him he said, but he believed what God said. Not believing there is a God. Yeah, and that's a knowing thing. And see, nobody can tell you what faith is. You have to experience it. You've got to cultivate that thing in you till it comes. When it comes alive, I'm going to tell you, just like a woman being pregnant. She's pregnant. Ain't nobody got to tell her she's pregnant. Something happened and she knows it. It may be a little teeny tiny thing in there right now, but she knows she's pregnant long before anybody else does. And eventually it's going to produce a fruit, say, in her life. And it's the same thing when we cultivate that faith in there. And when the Spirit of God comes upon that seed that He planted in you, just like it came forth in Mary, the Immaculate Conception was the story of your life. Mary being conceiving Jesus, the Christ in her, just like the Christ in us, the same way, it's the same pattern. And when it happens, and there's no backing out of it, is there? There's no abortions for that. They'd love to have it, but there's no abortion for that.
We need to cultivate. Now, earlier when we were talking about wisdom, mm-hmm. two words, we need to cultivate this faith
wisdom.
Mm-hmm. With God's wisdom.
With God's wisdom, not man's wisdom.
Man's wisdom, and that's where a lot of people, they feed off the wrong one.
Feed off the wrong tree. That's it.
No wonder you can't even see. You can't
no.
perceive anything of God if you don't get it from the right tree.
Absolutely. Okay, again, well, I'll read that verse 6 quickly and then we'll go on because we already went over it. But let him ask in faith, not wavering, not hesitating, not doubting, not trying to decide if God is right or wrong, because he that tries to decide if God is right or wrong or hesitates or waves or doubting is like a wave of the sea tossed with the wind and what? Agitated or stirred up. And you know, there's another meaning there. It means mixed, wavering between hope and fear. They're uncertain, wouldn't you say? As long as I'm double-minded in this stuff, I don't know. I'm just uncertain. How can you say I know if you say I'm thinking? I think. I know means you've already thought the process through and you've got an answer now with the facts. Okay? Verse 7 says, because let not that humanity or man faced or that mind imagine that he shall receive anything from God. Don't let that natural mind think that it shall that man receive anything from the Lord. And then it goes on in 8 and saying, a double-minded man or a two-spirited. And if you look at it, it says, I'm going to try to say the word if I can. It's like duosukos. And it means, and if you look at it in the word, it, and like everybody says, two-souled, like the word suke is sold. This is the duosukos, and it literally means two-spirited. If you look in the Greek language, it says two-spirited. See, he's got the spirit of man and the spirit of God. Is unstable in what? Part of his ways? All of them. So what can he help you with? Nothing. Nothing he can do. And that's where most of the church is. That's they're trying to live with Adam and Christ both. And there's doubt already built into that. In it. That's an oxymoron. Let the brother of low degree, and that means not rising far from the ground, okay, rejoice in that he is exalted. But the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass, he shall pass away. He said, a man that's exalted himself, he should be thankful that God brought him down to reality, shouldn't he? And the man of low degree ought to be thankful that he's there when he is exalted, because God will do the exalting. Didn't he say, if you exalt yourself, he'll abase you. If you abase yourself, he'll exalt you. Same thing. And all flesh is as grass, as it says in 1 Peter 1:24. Because the sun is no sooner risen with the, not a, but the burning heat, but it withers the grass and the flower there falls away, and the grace, now the word grace here is incorrect. We know the word grace means the divine influence in your heart and a reflection into your lifestyle. But this word grace really doesn't mean grace at all. It literally should say the word and the beauty of the, not fashion, but the beauty of the appearance of it, perishes. When the sun comes up on a flower, it don't take very long to burn it up, does it? Wilts it up pretty quickly. And the beauty of its appearance perishes, so also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. When God comes and puts a light on your ways that are incorrect in the man that's prideful and arrogant, what happens? They're very short-lived. He had to do it in my life because I was there, and he had to wilt me away, and he did it. It's okay, because now I see the truth, and it's worth it. Blessed, or supremely blessed, is the man that endures adversity, affliction, and trouble sent by God to test one's character. That's what that word says, temptation. So blessed, or supremely blessed, is the man that endures the adversity, affliction, and trouble sent by God to test one's character. Hey, that tells you the whole story right there, don't it? It was sent by God, from God, to test your character. Whatever the situation, it's there to test your character. Now, if you had not the character of God, why would God be testing for the character? It's the touchstone, absolutely. It's showing you how much of God is in you. And even though you don't believe it to start with, eventually he's going to convince you that God is in you. Because you're going to begin to persevere, and you're going to begin to start to respond in the same way that God would respond to it, the same situation. Because when he is, what? When he's acceptable, okay, when he's approved or acceptable, he shall receive the crown of life, the crown of life, not a crown of life, the crown of life. There's only one crown of life, okay? If the word a was there, the indefinite article, it would mean there's all kinds of different crowns of life. But there's only one crown of life, and we can all have the same one. See, we can all have the same one, which the Lord himself has promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil. Neither tempts he any man with evil, is what it should say. Okay? See, God can't be tempted with evil or deceived. The word there literally is deceived. Neither can any man be tempted with deception. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his personal lust and enticed or deceived. Okay? Because of his own personal problems, right? You can't blame anybody else for any problem we have, can we? We all have our own problems. I got a friend that says everybody's got a knot in their string somewhere. Some people hide it better than others, but they still got a knot in their string. Then when lust has conceived, it brings forth, okay, or generates sin. When lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, correct? And sin, when it is finished, produces what? Death, right? Carnal thinking. Hello. Be carnally minded is death. Be spiritually minded is life and peace. So it says, whenever lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin has finished its work, it entirely completed, it produces carnal thinking. Right? Justifying is what? So when I get my mind, my lust in my mind, and I keep working and working and working and justifying them, guess what? Eventually I'll believe it, won't I? I'm justifying in my own mind. It's okay. Go ahead. You do anything you want to do because that's okay. Okay. Justifying is just a lying. You just missed the marks, all you did. Didn't say you was going to hell. Just said you missed that. You failed that test, okay? Verse 16 says, do not err, my beloved brethren. And that word err means to roam from safety and truth and virtue. Don't roam from safety, truth, and virtue. If you get away from the truth, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be deceived, and you're going to come forth with this, what they call sin in your life. Okay? Now, did I say you was going to sin? How can you sin when there's no law? You can't. But you can think you sin. And you think, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If I think I'm guilty of something, I will act as a guilty person, won't I? Okay. But if I think as an as a freed man, a cleared man, justified man, that hath no guilt on me, how will I live? You'll live as a free man. See? If I go before a judge, he says, not guilty. Okay, I'm acting as an innocent man. But if I'm guilty, and I believe I'm guilty, I'm going to act as a guilty man. I'll respond in every way as a guilty person, won't I? When are we going to believe that God said we're not guilty? We're holy, we're righteous, we're unblameable, we're unaccusable. When are we going to believe these things? They're in this book. When are we going to believe what God said to us? See, there's cultivating your faith to believe what God said. Well, I understand, but that's where they come from to start with. It's a witness in this book of what God has wrote in our heart. God didn't write in our heart that you're a dirty, rotten sinner going to hell. God did not put that in the book. God said you're holy and righteous and unblameable, unaccusable. You're not guilty. You're innocent. You're unblameable. These are the things God says about us. Why can't we believe them? Because the church world every Sunday morning tells you, you better be repentant, because if you don't, you're going to hell for sure. Well, you're already in hell. And hell's got a big steeple on it. They'll get that in later. Read Isaiah 5 and they'll figure it out. Okay, I'm going to get off that one. Do not err. You can't violate a law that's not there, because the only law we have now is love. If you don't love people, you're violating God's law of love. The two greatest commandments. Love the Lord to God with all your heart, soul, mind, and body. And it should be heart, spirit, mind, and body. And guess what? And love your neighbor as yourself. There it is right there. Look at verse 17. Every or all good gifts and all perfect gifts is from what? Huh? What's your book say? Okay, it's wrong. You know what it says? It's from the first. Did you get that? It's from the first. What did Jesus say about himself? I am the first and the last. I'm the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, the ending. So where'd every good gift come from? Not from above. It came from God. It came from the first. And God was before everything. That would make him first, wouldn't it? It came out of God, out of the Christ. And comes down from the Father of lights, right? From whom is no transmutation or change. This variableness of, you know, should be no transmutation or change. So, guess what? There's no change. Remember what we said a while ago? If God changed one thing in his thinking process today, he wasn't God, he would be destroyed, wouldn't he? Right there it says it. There's no transmutation or change. Neither shadow of turning. God's not changing his mind about anything. And today the church world believes, just ask God and he'll do it. If God's got a plan set and the book says his plans and purposes were set before the foundation of the world and his plans and purposes will prevail, says many times, then if I think that I can change him, then I don't think he's God. If I think I... See, we got this pattern because our children do it, and we probably done it as children to our parents. We kept aggravating them and pestering them until they just gave in and said, all right, go ahead and do it. Well, God's not going to change. You can aggravate him all you think you can, and God's just going to smile and say, no, my son, you'll do it my way. Because my name is not your way, it's Yahweh. Right?
No change of mind.
He said what's going to be, and that's what it's going to be. No matter how much you kick and flail, you don't get your way. And that's love, see? He's not going to change, and that is love. Whether we like it or not, God's going to get it. His way. Absolutely. He says, no, wait, be a while yet, something. But it's always taken care of. Just in too big a hurry, aren't we? Yep. Verse 18 goes on to say, of his own will begat he us. Of his own will, or his own what? With his own will, or his own desire, his own purpose. But a will, this word will here means something, and it's different from just saying will, his will or his purpose. It's a word that was spoken that had a thought process that preceded it. Does that make sense to you? Before you say something, there's a thought process that creates it in your mind. Before you speak it. Even though you're not aware of the process taking forth, taking place, it still happens. And that's what this word means. It means there was a word spoken with a thought process preceding it, and God's thought process had preceded everything before it came in existence. Okay? And it, with His own will, or His He had a thought process that proceeded into the Word that brought us forth. Does that make sense to you? He begat us with a word, right, of truth. The word of truth. Into us. Into us should, or to exist, should be exist. The word should be exist. This is a tough one here to break it out. Of His own will begat He us with the word preceded by a thought process. Into us. He turned us into us. His thought process became us. How's that? Does that make sense to you? His thought process became us. He thought us into existence. Like in the King James, they didn't know any other way other than to say it is, God said, and let there be, and it was. Okay, that was their way of expressing. But this is telling you, with His thought process came the reality of us. Okay? That we should be a kind of first fruits of His what? No. It says not the word creatures is incorrect. It should say the original formation. We should be a first fruits of the original formation. And remember in Genesis 1 when we said, in the beginning God created heaven and earth? In the first fruit, it should say, God created heaven and earth. And that's tying this right to Genesis 1:1. I believe that's what it is. I didn't write the word down or anything like that, but I know it means the original formation. Okay? You have to look it up on because I didn't have it right at my existence. Huh? Ktesis? Ktesma is what it is? Okay. Ktesis is the creation, but the original creation is ktesma. Okay. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let all humanity be swift to hear, not every man, but all humanity be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to what? And now the word mind, here's something. I mean, it has meaning to me. Maybe it won't mean a thing to you, but I'm going to share it with you. This word wrath, it means a desire, to desire excitement of the mind. Slow to desire the excitement of the mind. And I've just shared with people recently, and Lois has been sharing about how many people, they say they don't like to be angry, but they do. And if you tell them they like to be angry, they get angry again because it's the truth. Do you know why they like to be angry? Maybe this will help somebody. I'm saying it for a reason. When you get angry, your mind creates secretions in your body. It's a drug that comes out. There's hormones that come out in your body. You know, like an adrenaline high.
Like biochemical serotonin.
Yes. Those chemicals, serotonin, different chemicals, I don't know the names of them, but I know when you get angry, those things are dumped into your system. And it gives you a euphoric high, and you can just, like if someone gets mad, if you can't get mad, it feels like it's all pent up inside and it's eats you up. But you can dump it out, you know. And that's the natural way of doing it. Rather than disciplining your mind to get rid of it, they just vomit up on everybody else. Okay? Yep. Yep. Right. It's the natural way of expressing yourselves, which is not the godly way, is it? Okay? So that anger, there is a type of adrenaline high or some kind of it's kind of like an addiction when it feels good to blow up and explode, you know. If you can't voice or dump out those emotions, it really frustrates you. So it's a way to clean yourself up. It's a natural way of doing it. Not a good way, but the natural way.
There's a song we heard on the radio last night that said something about
they want it. They really do. They get a high out of it.
Just leave me alone. I want to be mad for a while.
Yeah, and I know some that fit that bill perfectly. And in a little while, they'll be back to normal.
Don't try to reconcile right now. Reconcile.
Yeah. I wonder where that song came from.
I mean, I heard it loud and clear. And it was pouring down the rain on us, too.
And it goes on in verse 20 and says, because the wrath, or that desire to be angry, you know, the excitement in your mind, works not the righteousness of God. Very clear, isn't it?
There's my saying.
What?
Anger is the wind that blows.
It's the light out of your mind. There you go. Anger is the wind that blows the light out of your mind. See, because the anger or the desire for excitement in your mind, the natural man, works not the righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside or put away all filthiness of superfluity. What's that word superfluity mean? Nothing to me or anybody else probably. But if you see what it really means, it means excess. Lay away, therefore, put away all filthiness of excess. Excess of what? Excess of anything. When you hoard things up, you do things like that, excess, got to have too much, got to have the best of this and everything going. That's excess, okay? Wickedness, excess of wickedness. And receive in meekness or humility the engrafted or implanted word, logos of God, which is a spiritual word, the one that is able to deliver your what?
Spirit.
The one that is able to deliver your spirit. My soul does not need to be delivered because my soul is going to die. Every soul has to die. The word of God, sharper than a two-edged sword, it divides and pierces under the soul from the spirit. Okay? And that soul is a mixture. Flesh and blood, mixture, does not inherit the kingdom of God. It cannot enter the Holy of Holies, can it? So we have to let that thing go aside. My way of thinking is not going to make it. I have to think with the mind of Christ. Correct? So we got to let this thing go and realize it's not about the soul. God's not saving souls. He's saving our spirits. Okay? Because it says in Ecclesiastes, the dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. That's the picture, okay?
Logos.
Yeah, that's the logos.
That's also speaking of thought process.
Sure it is.
Talking about the will.
His word is his will.
Thought process is coming to life.
Absolutely it is. And that only way you can do it is put away all that desire for anger and retaliation, revenge and all that stuff, and come to the peace. And he said, my peace I leave unto you. And if I receive that peace that God has left unto us, guess what? I won't have any problem, will I? I'll be able to handle anything God's hand throws at me. Anything the world throws at me, God will be there to catch it for me by the Spirit that's in us. See, it's beautiful when you see it. Okay, verse 22. But be ye doers of the word, of the Logos, of the God's truths, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. Deceiving yourselves. The word own shouldn't be there. Just deceiving yourselves. Now, you know what that word deceiving really means? It means to reckon wrong, to misreckon, to deceive, or literally, think wrong. It's wrong thinking, isn't it? When I'm deceived, I'm not thinking properly, am I? It's wrong thinking. It'd be double-minded again. Two-spirited. Okay, back that's up to 23. Because if any be a hearer of the Logos, the Word of God, and not a doer, he is likened to a man. I don't like to use that unto. That unto is King James. Because there's no unto word in there. It's just to or into. And beholding or fully observing. Beholding, it means fully observing. He fully observed who he was. Now there's going to be a time in our lives when we look at who we really are. We're really going to see that. And then we're going to make a decision. And here's where most people go. Okay? Fully observing his Genesis face in a mirror, is what it should say. His Genesis face, his beginning face. We're going to see, but there's people that are deceived into believing they're only human beings. You're only human. Well, guess what? You were created in God's image. He is spirit. That is the same lie that was told in the garden to Eve. If you do these things, you can be like God. You were already created in God's image, but you don't believe it. You've bought the lie. Not a lie, the lie. The same one that's talked about in Thessalonians. If you don't believe and receive the truth, God will send you a strong delusion and you will believe a lie, the King James says, but it's a definite article, the lie. And the lie is, if I do enough, I can be like God. If I keep doing. And we know doo-doo shouldn't be in the temple, should it? Okay, we all know what doo-doo is. And that's all the church world's given us, is a bunch of doo-doo. Okay? Because, verse 24, he fully observes himself and goes his way. Notice he didn't say goes God's way or the right way, did he? He went his own way and immediately forgets what manner of man. Now it says he was. It's a present tense word. He be or he is. He forgets what manner of man he really is. And that's what's happened to humanity. In the Garden of Eden, we lost our identity. Adam and Eve forgot who they were. They bought the lie from the carnal mind, believing that serpent, that carnal mind, that told her, if you'll do these things, God will accept you. You were already God's child. Doesn't it say in Psalm 82:6, John 10:34 also as a witness, Jesus said, did I not say in your law that you are all sons of the Most High God? Psalm 82:6 that he quoted says, guess what? We are all sons of the Most High God. Okay? So we're all children, but we don't believe it. If we don't believe it, we put ourselves in the realm of Adam, don't we? And Jesus was called the last Adam. From his time on, there is no Adam. It's only an illusion of our mind. He took care of that illusion. But we don't want to believe it. We still want to go back and buy that illusion. That's what they see in the mirror. The mirror picture is an illusion. And you know, they can take that glass and make you look like all kinds of things. They can control that and make it look all kinds of ways. They can make you look real tall, real short, real thin, real fat. You know, make you look old, make you look young. They can do all kinds of things with mirrors. It's illusions. And that's what the world does. They give us illusions and we buy into it. I don't buy into it. I'm sorry.
Looking in a mirror, they're also seeing just a natural mirror.
The natural reflection, not the truth. Not seeing God at all. Because God isn't going to show up that way. But look at verse 25. But the ones that look carefully into the perfect law, okay, into the complete law. There's a lot of people look in and say, oh, I'm saved and I've got my ticket and I'm ready to go, waiting on the bus. But if you look into the complete law, there's more to it than waiting on the bus, you know what I mean? And I haven't seen any spiritual bus stops yet, have you? Forget that one. Into the complete law of liberty. You know what that word liberty really means? It means living as we should, not as we please. If we're living in liberty, we're living as we should and not as we please. True liberty in God is not doing what you want. Freedom's not doing what you want. And in this country, we got a perverted, Americanized view of freedom. Freedom is living within God's limitations and God's boundaries and being happy there. Totally satisfied there. I am. Whatever he wants is fine.
But the natural man's mind will still put bondage on that.
Sure. And that's what the church world does. They say, yeah, all but. Well, when you say but, you just wiped out everything you said before that. Everybody, it said, but all the ones that look carefully into the complete law of liberty, and that means living as we should, not as we please, and continues or remains or stays there, he, being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in all of his, what? What's your King James say? Deeds? Well, that's not what it says. It literally says he'll be blessed in all in his obedience that he renders, in all the obedience he renders. As I'm obedient, that's what God's looking for. Didn't he say, I don't want sacrifice? But I want obedience. Right? So God just wants us to obey. What father would not want his son to obey him? Come on. That's a natural process as well as spiritual. Every father or mother wants their children to be obedient, don't they? Just a natural process. And that shows you the spiritual process. Verse 26. If any man among you not seem but think himself to be religious or earnestly compliant to the in the observance of religion. I like that understanding. If you think yourself to be religious or be earnestly compliant in the observance of religion, and that's not a good thing in my book, and bridles not or restrains not his tongue, but deceives his own heart or his external religious worship. Is that it? No. And deceives his own heart. Yeah. External religious worship. This man's religion is vain. His external religious worship is in vain. And the word vain literally means profitless, empty idolatry. So when I only do the external thing because that's what everybody tells me to do, it's worthless, it's profitless, it's empty, it's idolatry. And you know, if you tell people this truth, how mad they'll be at you, especially on this day, because it's Sunday, right? If you tell them, and 99% of the church out here, church world, 90% of it is out here doing vain worship that has nothing to do with God. It's just doctrines and dogmas of men. They're not trying to understand how to live their life right and to love their brothers and sisters. They're not trying to do that. How to get along with the rest of the world. They're not trying to do that. All they're trying to do is put in their time and hurry up, preacher, and get done so I can get to Bob Evans because the line's getting longer.
And I can control you.
Yes, and that's all it is. It's just a control. So.
Isn't it amazing? We were watching someone this morning when David was quoting the verse about being the light that lights to every man.
Oh.
Watch the scowl come across his face and the pious religious stand straight.
Yeah, I said that to a guy this morning. I forget what his question was, and I said, how are you? I said, I am the light that lights the world. And he didn't like it. He's supposed to be a preacher, you know. He didn't go good with him. Yeah.
What is that religion?
That religion is an earnest, they have an earnest, compliant, earnestly compliant in the observance of religion. They think they're right, and there's nothing you can do to change it because I'm right, you know. But pure religion, okay, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this. See, it isn't doing doo-doos, is it? It isn't washing the preacher's car. It isn't cleaning the church. It isn't cutting the grass. It isn't doing or sucking up to somebody, is it? Here's what pure religion is. To visit the orphans and the widows. That means one without a husband, okay? In their affliction or in their pressures, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now let's look at this spiritually. I just read that. Now let's really look at it, because there's something to it. A lot of times people don't read the first verse, the last verse. They don't really mean anything. You know, you already got the gist of it. That's what people think. But sometimes in these first and last verses, there is tremendous wisdom. Okay? Look what it says. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless. Do you really think he's talking about the natural? The ones who don't know who their father are. They're orphans because they don't know who their father are. So, we all have a father, don't we?
Well, no, just like when Jesus went into
the temple.
There was the religious people on one side and the sinners on the other.
Yeah. Yeah, said, forgive me, Lord, you know.
Yeah, he went to them.
Yeah, he went to the sinners.
Yeah.
Right. So he said, go to the Father, the ones who really don't know who God is. But the religious people who think they know God, you know, I'll take care of them later, don't worry. It'll all work out. But he said, to go to the fathers, the ones who don't have the identity of who they are. See, if I don't know who I am, would I know who my Father is? Because my identity is tied up in who my Father is, and I'm talking spiritually. If I know who my Father is, I know who I am, right? And if I'm a widow, if I have no husband, Christ is the husband, right? If I don't know who he is, I'm going to be a widow. And will I ever produce a son, Christ, in me without that marriage? And if you read the book, it said the marriage of the Lamb has come. It's past tense. It's already over. The marriage is already finished if you realize it. No. In the Old Testament, it says something I can't think of the words now. Oh, I know it. I know the thought process, but I can't say the words. He's about calling them a name, you know, and says, because you're married now. I can't think the word. Ah, hate that when my mind won't go there. I know the thought process, but I can't pull it up. It's in the Old Testament, where it says the word that he called him is married now. Don't call me that because now I'm married. I can't think of the word. I can even see it on the page. Oh, I hate that when I can do that and can't pull it up. Yep, somebody have to do their homework and look that up. I can see it. That's one you'll have to dig out yourself because I can't come up with it right now. But it's about, this is something very spiritual, and said to visit the fatherless and the widows, the truly the ones who don't have the identity of father in them and are not married to their husband Christ, in their pressures. Now, in their pressures, who don't have pressures in this world? There's nobody that gives this world without pressures, right? So, in the pressures is when you're going to find out who you are and who your husband is. You're going to find out you're already married to him because of what he did, not what you did. Go to the Old Testament scripture. The women didn't have any say in the marriage. The fathers made the arrangements, didn't they? And whenever there was time came, the husband came and got them. Hello, did you hear that? The woman didn't go down. We are the bride of Christ, am I right? Well, when he's ready for me, he's going to come and get me. Right? Can you hear what I'm saying? It's not up to you to make a decision for God, to make a decision for Jesus. There ain't no place in the book that says that. That's man's doctrine. You prepare yourself. The bride has to make herself ready. That's all I got to do. I got to prepare myself to receive my husband. That's all I have to do. And when I do what I'm told by the Spirit of God and not by man's organization, I will prepare myself, and he will come to me when he sees I've come to maturity enough to consummate this marriage. Okay? So all you've got to see. And it says there's something else on the back of this thing. In their afflictions, and to keep yourself unspotted from the world. You know what the world is? It's not this earth out here, huh? It's the carnal thinking of the system, the religious system. See? The word cosmos means the orderly arrangement of the world. It's the arrangement of the mind of man, the way they think. And you know how hard that is?
Yeah.
I would think everybody could say yes to that, you know. It's difficult. I don't care who you are. I have to fight it every day myself. Jesus himself had to fight it every day to the day he died, except when he was delivered out of the desert.
That one to use the thing about the mirror. That's the same thing. When we look at ourselves,
do we see the truth or do we see what God says?
He's not talking about that natural mirror. He's talking about this mirror.
Look at your spiritual face and don't walk away and leave it. Most people do. When you look at your true identity and find out who you are, don't walk away from that. Keep that image in your mind because that's who you really are. This other is just an illusion that the world and your mind has told you. You've bought into it.